And I'm here to say the warning lights are blinking red again.
Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats is set to step down from his post next month. During his tenure, Coats repeatedly emphasized the security threats that foreign governments, including Russia and China, pose to the United States and our election systems. Here's Coates speaking with NBC's Andrea Mitchell last July.
It's undeniable that the Russians are taking the lead on this. Basically, they are the ones that are trying to undermine our basic values, divide us with our allies. They are the ones that are trying to wreak havoc over our election process. We need to call them out on that.
Trump's pick to replace Coates is Republican Representative John Ratcliffe of Texas. During Robert Mueller's Capitol Hill testimony last week, Ratcliffe acknowledged Russian influence in the 2016 election, but instead chose to focus on opposition research obtained by Christopher Steele for the Hillary Clinton campaign.
I very much agree with your determination that Russia's efforts were sweeping and systematic. I think it should concern every American. That's why I want to know just how sweeping and systematic those efforts were. I want to find out if Russia interfered with our election by providing false information through sources to Christopher Steele about a Trump conspiracy that you determined didn't exist.
The Ratcliffe nomination comes at a crucial moment for our national security with the 2020 election on the horizon, an issue that Robert Mueller has repeatedly emphasized since the publication of his report in April.
Let me say one more thing. Over the course of my career, I have seen a number of challenges to our democracy. The Russian government's effort to interfere in our election is among the most serious.
The nomination has also concerned some politicians and intelligence officials that U.S. intelligence agencies will be less independent under a director who may prioritize the interests of a president over pressing national security threats.
It was in the months prior to September 2001 when, according to then-CIA Director George Tenet, the system was blinking red. And here we are nearly two decades later, and I'm here to say the warning lights are blinking red again.
I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's where we start today on The Takeaway. So what's next for the intelligence community under President Trump? Natasha Bertrand is here to help us out. She's national security correspondent for Politico. Thanks for being with us, Natasha.
Thank you so much.
Also is David Priest, COO of the national security organization Lawfare and author of the book, The President's Book of Secrets. David also served in the CIA under Presidents Clinton and George W. Bush. Thanks for being with us, David.
Hi, Tanzina.
So, David, let's start with you. The National Intelligence Director position itself was created in the aftermath of September 11th. Remind us why that was the catalyst.
The idea was that the intelligence community had been doing a relatively good job on different aspects of the threat that became 9/11, but that the agencies weren't really talking to each other. They weren't coordinating their efforts. The concept was that having some kind of Uber manager, the director of national intelligence, would help break down those walls between agencies to ensure that information coming into the U.S. government through one channel was being communicated to relevant other departments and agencies addressing cross-cutting issues. So the DNI was created to do that and also eventually to do things like manage the overall budget of the intelligence community, to engage with stakeholders and things of that sort.
So, Natasha, what were Dan Coats' main priorities during his tenure as Director of National Intelligence?
Yeah, so one of the biggest threats that he saw to American democracy and to the safety and security of the United States was, potential hacking and potential interference with our election infrastructure. And so that's why he said, that famous quote about the lights are blinking red again, because he saw evidence that, not only Russia, but other foreign adversaries were trying to meddle with our elections in terms of the actual digital infrastructure that we have in this country. So what he did was he, right before he left, he appointed an election security czar named Shelby Pearson to oversee efforts in this area across intelligence agencies. And she's actually the first person to have that role. So that's kind of evidence of how seriously he took this.
David, pivoting back to you for a second, you've interviewed several former directors of national intelligence for research into your book. Tell us how those previous directors have viewed the position.
Sure. The DNIs, or the directors of national intelligence, all came into the job up to this point with significant experience using intelligence, in some cases from a military background, in some cases from a diplomatic background, and in the case of the incumbent, Dan Coats, primarily from his work on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence when he was a senator, as well as when he was ambassador to Germany for almost 4 years, where he was using top secret intelligence. But all of them, and I've spoken to all of them, the first three I interviewed for my book on intelligence, they all took the job as a senior role, kind of building on what they'd done before. That is, they still saw themselves as public servants, not as political appointees with a partisan role, despite the senior nature of the job. But they saw it building on those traditions that they'd built up in their work experience, building on the role of diplomacy, building on the role of military intelligence, building on the relationships we've built with foreign countries to address transnational threats. All of them were very conscious of the fact that there were already people running each of the intelligence agencies, and coming in as, in effect, the boss of those people could create some tensions. And those came out most dramatically with Dennis Blair, the DNI from 2009 to 2010, who clashed with CIA Director Leon Panetta over who got to name intelligence representatives overseas. So there is an inherent tension there, but all of them saw their job as trying to manage the intelligence community, not to play a political role.
And David, I want to, you mentioned the inherent tension between the DNI and other top officials in the intelligence agencies themselves. Well, what about tensions between the Director of National Intelligence and the President? We know that, I'm wondering if you can assess a little bit the relationship between Dan Coats and President Trump, for example.
The background to this is that tension between intelligence leadership and the President is not a bad thing. In fact, a president who pushes back against intelligence assessments, who wants more information, who wants to hear about alternative explanations for the limited information we're able to collect, that's all a good thing. That's a sign of an engaged president who understands the limits of intelligence and prods his intelligence community to do more. The difference is when a president makes those objections public or undercuts his own intelligence community, which can undermine the ability to recruit spies. It can undermine the ability to put that information together. In the case of Dan Coats, we have only a few snapshots, and then a whole lot of interpretation around those snapshots. But we have only a few snapshots about the tensions between the DNI and the president. The most public one, of course, is on the issue of Russia. The president publicly has said he just doesn't buy a lot of the intelligence that he's getting on Russia. He just chooses not to believe it. And he expresses that publicly, which puts Dan Coats in a very tough position. But instead of giving in, what Dan Coats has done is he has continued to put out assessments that repeat. Russia interfered in the 2016 election. They're going to try to do it again. He has not backed down from the judgments that his intelligence analysts came up with. He's continued to push that message forward, even if the president does not want to hear it.
So, Natasha, looking now at the nominee, John Ratcliffe, who President Trump has selected to replace Dan Coats, what do we know, what national security experience will Ratcliffe be bringing to this position? And I guess the follow-up to that would be, he is seen to have a quite a close relationship to the president in terms of his loyalties to the president. How could that impact a potential DNI position?
Yeah, so he has very little national security experience and no intelligence experience aside from sitting for a few months on the House Intelligence Committee. He's been in Congress for, this is his third term now, he was chief of the Anti-Terrorism and National Security Division for the Eastern District of Texas, but he actually, there's no evidence that he actually ever prosecuted a terrorism case in that role. And he also served as the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Texas for about 2 years. So he comes into this position potentially if he gets confirmed with vastly, fewer roles in intelligence and in national security than we've seen other directors of national intelligence have in the past, to put it mildly. And he's also virtually unknown among the very senators that would approve, that would confirm him. We at Politico, we talked to a number of senators yesterday who said that they had never really talked to him. They had never heard of him before his performance last week at the Mueller hearing. A few said that they'd seen him on TV, but that they really weren't familiar with his work. So this is going to be, he's facing a lot of headwinds going into this confirmation battle, if it even gets that far, because at this point we're seeing that there have been some, you know, major contradictions in what he's put on his website about his national security experience and what is actually the truth about that experience. So the real chief qualification he seems to have in terms of, you know, of how the White House sees him is that he's loyal to the president. And he's kind of proven that over the last couple months that he's been on TV kind of slamming the Russia investigation and criticizing special counsel Robert Mueller. Again, we saw that last week where he kind of went on the offensive and really put Mueller in a corner with regard to the obstruction of justice question. So we still aren't very confident that he's going to even get to the confirmation process just because of the number of controversies that have come out already about him in the last 48 hours. But if he does, it's probably going to be pretty hard for him to even get out of the committee.
And Natasha, even if it's not Ratcliffe, I mean, I'm wondering, given the repeated concerns that not just Robert Mueller, but others in Congress and beyond have stated about our election security going into 2020, do you see it possible that the intelligence agencies will individually decide to pursue their own lines of inquiry beyond the DNI, who may or may not be, they may or may not have confidence in?
With regard to election security, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's possible because one of the things Coates did after he left, before he left, was he directed the intel agencies to actually appoint executives to coordinate election security. That was one of his biggest priorities, and it's obviously one of the areas where, you know, things were most tense between him and the president, because the president sees any questioning of, you know, potential attacks on election infrastructure and the Russians' interference as a question about his own legitimacy as president. And so I think that, you know, in coordination with the Department of Homeland Security, state and local election officials, as well as with the FBI and the other intel agencies that are responsible for monitoring, foreign hacking activity and potential foreign interference in the election, we will see kind of the beginnings of a whole of government approach to this. But of course, we can't have that really in practice unless the president is leading from the top on this. And that's something obviously that we haven't seen.
Natasha Bertrand is national security correspondent for Politico, and David Preece is with the security organization Lawfare and author of The President's Book of Secrets. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.